Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. Welcome to Average Joe Radio. This is Average Joe. This week we remembered D-Day, especially prominent in the news and in a lot of documentaries and movies and everything, particularly because it was the 75th anniversary. When I did my video promo earlier today, I said that it wasn't really a celebration, but after second thought, I mean, it really was. I mean, we lost a lot of lives were lost, but it was really the beginning of the end for Germany in World War II. So we'll talk about that. Feel free to call in 914-219-0884. This week, album of the week, Rolling Stones, Exile on Main Street, released May 1972. I know we've done another Rolling Stones, but you know what can you say about the Rolling Stones? I mean, you know, they're pretty. Who don't like the Rolling Stones? I'm not going to do a This Day in History because we're really talking about this week in history. And so we're going to get right into the subject matter this week or today. I have been a student of history mostly in my adult life. I did not really get into history much as a high school and grade school student. I think that it was really because of the way it was presented. It was a matter of just textbook learning dates and names and just real dry. But, you know, as an adult with the internet, you know, the History Channel, all the documentaries and the movies that they make now with that, you know, somewhat accurately portray historical events as well as they can. History has just become a very strong hobby in my life. Hobby, I say, in that I'm interested in it and I love living history. I love going to museums. I love going to battlegrounds, air shows. Mostly, I guess you could say military history is what I'm mostly interested in because I guess those are the things that made probably the strongest changes in our world and culture. I love old airplanes. I love old cars. I think you guys already know that. I have a love for antique cars. And so, you know, we've been this week and last week probably we've been seeing a lot of documentaries and some movies based on D-Day and things about D-Day. D-Day was the start of Operation Overlord. D-Day was actually June 6, 1944, and it was when Allied forces launched a combined naval, air, and land assault on Nazi-occupied France, Normandy. By the end of the day, the Allies had established a foothold along the coast and could begin their advance into France. So if you look at the, I'm just getting right into this, and I see Great Scott is on the line with us. Anytime you want to chime in, Great Scott, just you know, hit me on the text, and I'll open up the line for you. I was talking to Above Average Don earlier, and we were talking about just the geography of the attack, as it were, invasion. Omaha Beach was probably the most famous, if you will, of the beaches that's been talked about. If you're going from north to south, Omaha and Utah is the order of those beaches, and the Americans came in on those beaches. And we're going to talk about more about the logistics of why this happened, but just thought I would go ahead and get this out of the way, and maybe I'm going in the wrong order. But like I said earlier, we're just gonna kind of shoot from the hip. I got some good information, though. So, and then there was below Utah, if you go further south, is Gold Beach, and that was where the Brits came in. And then there was Juno Beach, that was the Canadians, and then Sword Beach, S-W-O-R-B, and that was also the Brits. So that was kind of the order of the geography. I'm pretty sure if you're listening to this show, you've heard of Normandy, and I mean, to me, that's probably, if I ever make it over to the other side of the pond, that's probably the one place I'd like to go first. There's a lot of places I'd like to see overseas, but that that is such a historical event. Like I said, it turned the tide. It made all the difference. It was really, like I said, the beginning of the end for Germany. Looking at some numbers, Operation Overlord, the Allied casualties figures for D-Day have generally been estimated at about 10,000. That included 2,500 dead, broken down by nationality. The usual D-Day casualty figures are approximately 2,700 for the British, 946 for the Canadians, and 6,603 for the Americans. This was planned probably for more than a year. Dwight D. Eisenhower was a general at the time, and he, I'm trying to go through my notes here, so bear with me. Lieutenant General Frederick Morgan and his team of British, American, and Canadian officers submitted plans for the invasion in July of 1943. So they started in July. So it was almost a year. Although limited planning for an invasion of Europe began soon after the evacuation of Dunkirk in 1940, the detailed preparations for Operation Overlord did not begin until after the Tehran Conference in late 1943. So a command team led by General Eisenhower was formed in December of 1943 to plan the naval, air, and land operations. They also planned deception campaigns to draw the Germans' attention and strength away from Normandy. And that worked. To build up resources for the invasion, British factories increased production, and in the first half of 1944, approximately 9 million tons of supplies and equipment crossed the Atlantic from North America to Britain. A substantial Canadian force had been building up in Britain since December of 1939, and over 1.4 million American servicemen arrived during 1943 and 1944 to take part in the landings. It was a huge operation. In so far as the German side goes, over 425,000, over 425,000 Allied and German troops were killed. Wow. Wounded or went missing during the Battle of Normandy. This figure includes over 209,000 Allied casualties, with nearly 37,000 dead amongst the ground forces and a further 16,714 deaths amongst the Allied air forces. I have seen information about all the planes, trains, and automobiles, so to speak, all the airplanes and the ships and the boats, and all of the I think it was called a Higgins boat, the boats that came up with the ramps and dropped them off. If you've seen the movie Saving Private Ryan, it pretty much starts out with them landing on Normandy in these Higgins boats. They drop the ramp, and these soldiers are coming out, and a lot of them, before they even got out of the boat, were shot. I had seen the documentary this week where they were talking about it from the German side, and the Germans were pretty much instructed to wait till they got within, I think it was within either 400 yards or might have been 400 feet, before they started blasting away with their machine guns. So, again, if you've seen Saving Private Ryan, a lot of actual people that, soldiers that were there had seen, you know, the preview of the Saving Private Ryan and said this was probably the most realistic version of anything they'd ever seen. It's pretty brutal. I mean, it was awful. And speaking, I mean, there's been a lot of movies made about D-Day. Call in 914-219-0884. I am not an authority at all on this subject. Even though I've become a student of history, I was talking to Above Average Darwin earlier. It's like I read and I see all these documentaries and these movies, and I'm just really interested in it, but I really have a hard time hanging on to the details in my mind. I mean, I see the big picture, but, you know, I would be a terrible history teacher because I'd be scratching my head and like, okay, well, let me see. I'd have to look that up, you know. You know, it is what it is. So bear with me here. If you've got anything to share with us as the audience, me and the audience, please do. Please call in 914-219-0884. And also, if you have anything you just want to comment or you want to make a nomination for Album of the Month, averagejo@carolina.rr.com. So I believe Average Don is on the line. Average Don, is that you?
That is me.
How are you?
Well, I'm hanging in there. One of the most fascinating things about the D-Day planning, in my mind, is the fact that Hitler was convinced that the Americans were going, they knew that they were going to invade for a couple of years. They just didn't know where. And they thought it was going to be in Calais, which is across the Strait of Dover from England. And one of the little tricks they used to convince Hitler and his generals is that General Patton was assigned there. He had lost his command, and they moved him there as a decoy. They were using inflatable tanks and inflatable jeeps and trucks and other things to throw them off. And so, and Rommel also didn't think, because the weather was so bad, that they were going to invade during that time period. So he had left. I believe he went home for, was it his wife's birthday? But had Rommel and Hitler in command have anticipated Normandy, it would have turned out totally different. But the trick worked.
Right.
And that Calais was not their primary objective.
Yeah, I remember actually one of the documentaries I saw this year, this week, about them not Rommel not being there, and that was, as I had said earlier, they had deception campaigns, and I had forgot about the inflatable jeeps and stuff. That's a really good point. That was just, I mean, it was so well orchestrated, and the day of, the weather was still bad, but they went ahead and did it anyway, and that really threw them off, because they weren't expecting that.
Well, it was the tides, and they knew if they couldn't go ahead and launch the invasion by the 6th, they were going to have to wait about 30 days for the tides to be favorable again for an invasion, which would have thrown them at a disadvantage. You can't just hold an army that size in limbo for a month. So, and one other point, then I'll let you go, is Patton even though he was used as a decoy, he didn't actually enter into the fight, took over the Third Army in the conflict until about a month or about 2 months after the D-Day invasion. So Patton wasn't even involved in D-Day other than as a decoy.
Right. Right. I wonder how he felt about that.
Well, I think he sold his armor over that one because he wanted to fight. And actually, he was supposed to be like one of the most feared generals that the Nazis looked at Patton as being like super bad.
Yeah.
Which is why it worked.
Yeah. Well, that was good planning. So it's just super interesting how they pulled that off. I mean, it could have went bad. I mean, it could have failed, but they went in, you know, with everything they had pretty much.
Well, I've seen documentaries also on the engineering that went behind the Normandy invasion. They were actually taking concrete piers and floating them into place because of the offloading of a lot of the supplies that had to go along with the invasion. And so these massive, huge piers, concrete piers, floated, and they took them in there to use as an offloading point. So, well, anyway, I'll let the Scottster step in if he wants to, and I'm enjoying it.
Well, good. Thank you there, Average Don.
All right, man. Bye-bye.
See you. Bye. All right. Thanks, Average Don, for chiming in. We had been talking about a little bit this earlier. One thing I had been watching, Band of Brothers. I have been watching Band of Brothers recently, and I had so they were not. This was the Easy Company. They were not involved in the beach attack. They were actually paratroopers, and they went in. They were to capture the entrances to clear any obstacles around Causeway 2, a pre-selected route off of Utah Beach. And that was for the Allied forces that were landing from the sea a few hours later. So they actually kind of went in earlier. They left from Devon, an air base in Devon, England, and dropped the continent, or over the continent peninsula of Normandy. In the early hours of the morning on June 6th. One thing, let me see if Great Scott is on the line here. Great Scott, are you there?
I was about to mash go. How you doing?
Well, you know, I anticipated your mash and go. I was trying to think of something more witty to say.
Well, phone's dead. I'm out here in the car with it plugged in, but I was so close to hitting go. This will do. Good to hear from Average Don. I was intrigued with all that. I don't think I knew any of that, and I'm always glad to hear his input on everything, but I felt he'd know quite a bit about this. But
well,
I'm just fascinated.
Well, we had a conversation earlier when I was kind of prepping for the show and talked about a couple of things, and I'm glad he jumped in. I always try to get him to jump in, but when he wants to. But you know, if he don't want to, then that's okay too. And same with you, for that matter. But the reason I wanted to go ahead and pop you on the line was we were talking about one thing, and I'll let you make your comment that you want to make. But I just wanted to say this: we were talking about the C-47s, and since I was talking about the Band of Brothers. It seems like now that I know that that airplane, what it was, since I've been kind of doing my little research in the last, you know, month or so, and then relating that I got to actually see and crawl around on a C-47 at the Monroe Airport when they had the military air show a couple of years ago, which they do that every year.
Are they awesome or what?
Pardon?
Are they awesome or what?
It was awesome. One thing is really, really interesting about that airplane is it is a tail dragger. So being in a plane that big that's sloped towards the back, so like when you're walking in the plane, you're like walking uphill when you're going in the door, you know. And, you know, just getting in the dang thing, and it's kind of like being in a C-130, but not quite as big, but then, like I said, having that slope that you're walking into. But those planes, they were kind of the workhorse of the day, I guess, pre C-130, and they were not that fast, but they would hold together well. They got shot at and got holes poked in them, and they just kept going. I just love, you know, looking at old stuff like that and just thinking about where it's been, and then reading this history and seeing these movies and like. But anyway, on to Great Scott. What's up there, Great Scott?
Well, now you got me thinking about DC-3s or C-47s, but that was it's always moving when they have the gentleman over there in Normandy this time of year. And, of course, everybody agrees there probably won't be hardly anybody left next year. But, and this is an overused phrase, but that was the greatest generation, clearly.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
No offense to my peers, but I think that was a horrific thing that had to be done, and they just went and did it.
Yeah. There was actually, I hadn't heard, and maybe you and I were talking about this, that there was people that wanted to go and couldn't, and they believed in the cause so much they killed themselves because they couldn't go, if it was for a health problem or, you know, for whatever reason they weren't qualified. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I can't give you any specifics, but
I hate to hear that.
Yeah. that.
It always just fascinates me when they interview them, how matter of fact they are about it, and it's just our granddads or our dads in some cases went ahead and did what they had to do. You know, nothing at all to glorify all that, but if ever anything needed to be done, I think the Allies agreed, no matter what happens in Japan, we've got to make sure this Hitler mess goes away. And they
exactly
really did.
So this kind of set the you know, everything in action for overcoming Germany. Their actual official surrender was May 7th, 1945. So it was almost a year later, but it still, this was kind of this is what set things in motion that got them in there. And then, you know, that they made the mistake of hitting the Russians, and you know, that was a huge mistake, the Germans, that is,
right,
by hitting the Russians because of the weather. They just, that's what that was Napoleon's downfall. It gets a little cold in Russia. So I've heard.
I think someone would have told those folks that that had happened before.
You might want to carry a jacket. Dress
for
the
battle. Still in all, I know we've all had relatives that were over there, and they just spoke matter of factly. I don't have any of them at the invasion.
Yeah.
But they, one was in the Navy, one was a tail gunner and a B-24 for the Navy somehow out of England, and none of them saw any action, as they call it. But
right,
they were there to suppress any said action.
Well, I had actually, you know, as everybody knows by now, I'm pretty active in the local VFW post, and
right.
We used to have a gentleman that came there. They called him Doc, and he was a medic, and he actually served in World War II, Korea, and Vietnam. And when he was in World War II, he served under Patton, and they were somewhere. Now, I'm not going to get this story exactly right, but talking to this guy was incredibly interesting. They were somewhere. Patton showed up, him and Doc and his fellow medics, and they had on their helmets that had the crosses on them, you know, the medical cross.
Okay.
And Patton started cussing somebody and was about how why these guys were wearing these crosses on their helmets. Said that's the same thing as putting a bullseye on their head.
Oh.
Because they'll you know, so he said get them new helmets or paint, you know, cover up those medic crosses.
Sure.
And Doc also met Eisenhower. So
we
I don't remember any.
He was cool.
Yeah, yeah. Did you ever see that movie Ike with Tom Selleck?
Brother, you know there's so few movies I've seen, but that's one of them I have not seen.
Well, there's been a lot of movies, you know, obviously based on stories from D-Day. I actually have a list here. If you don't mind hanging with me, you're going to be the Mr. Ed McMahon.
I think I am co-host anymore.
Huh?
I think I am the co-host. I'm trying to do an Ed McMahon. It's pretty difficult to do.
Well, you don't mind if I call you Great Scott, do you?
That would be just fine.
I've been calling you Mr. Scott, but then it occurred to me when I heard the... I was thinking about Back to the Future and Great Scott. And I was like, man, that would be a great name for Great Scott.
Okay, cool. Now, will that be appearing on the check?
Pardon?
Is that how my name will appear on the check? That's all I'm wondering about.
Yeah, probably so. You need to open an account under Great Scott.
Will do.
Okay. So here's a movie list. Well, we already talked about, let me see, let me go back. I talked about Saving Private Ryan, and then Band of Brothers, which was a series on HBO, and then the one with Ike was actually Countdown to D-Day, and it was a made-for-TV movie, and I think it might have been like a three-part series or something, but it was really good because it was, you know, it illustrated the planning and the delay, like we were talking about with the weather and all that stuff, and then there's been some good documentaries, and Average Don was talking about this earlier, called 85 Days, and it was a documentary related to the 85 days up until or after D-Day. Actually, we got another caller here. Let's see who we got here. Hang on. There, Great Scott. Hello, caller.
Hello, how are you today? This is Mike from New York.
Hey, Mike from New York.
I regret that I found you so late. I would have liked to have heard the whole show. I've collected World War II war souvenirs and studied World War II for over 50 years. My 55 years. So I'm up in my 60s. I got my first German helmet when I was 7 years old, and then I ended up with a Japanese helmet and ended up collecting, and it never stopped. And so it's a subject close to my heart. I'm glad to see Blog Talk's got someone covering it.
Well, that's cool, Mike. I am by no means, I'm sure I don't know as much about the subject as you do, but I'm very interested in history, and earlier I was saying I have been an adult student. When I was a kid, I didn't really, I wasn't a very good student with history, but yeah, we've only got a minute or so here, Mike, but pardon?
It's not your fault. I mean, the schools, even if you were a good student, the schools they don't offer these kids enough. Did you notice one thing? Every one of the vets, every one of the interviews where the media would take this vet and they'd interview them and say, what do you think? What was it like? And what are your feelings? Every one of them in a different way would come down to the same thing that they said, they wish the schools would teach more about it. And these kids would really understand what they went through. It's true.
Well, that's awesome, Mike. We're about out of time, Mike. Man, I am so I'm sorry you got in late, but you can listen to the archive
unless you do overtime. Do you do any? Because usually Blog Talk gives you an extra hour for overtime for a little bit.
You say you listen to me all the time?
No. Blog Talk gives you overtime automatically.
Oh.
They give the shows. Yeah, they let it run. They don't shut you off immediately. It'll shut off on its own.
Oh, well, I'll guess we'll talk till we run out of time.
I didn't know that. They'll give you free overtime.
If not, let's do it next week, if that's possible. Seriously, I'd love to hear Mike.
Yeah, I don't know, to tell you the truth, guys, if I'd remember when or anything, because of my schedule, my wife and I are government contractors. I feed military for a living.
Huh.
So I never know what my schedule is going to be or where I'm going to be. We don't have a normal life. It's like having a leash on, which I don't mind, because it's for, you know, our men and women. If it wasn't for the soldiers, I'd regret I get involved with this. But it doesn't give us time to have a normal life in a way. But
right.
Yeah, collecting and studying it and hearing from the, I don't know, it gave me a different perspective. And, you know, when you're a little kid, you pick up a helmet, it's fun. You see it on TV. It's a, you know, it's in movies, and oh, it's exciting. But then you start getting older and you start realizing, wait a minute, this really happened.
Yeah.
These are
human.
And then even at a young age, I started saying, you know, this is, now it turns into a treasure hunt, and you're speaking with the veterans, and you're getting their items, and these things, these stories aren't in books. And these are the real people that live these stories. And
no doubt. And
now it's become sad, because, I mean, I've got a room with my car. I've got over 60, 65 German uniforms. I've got Japanese, British, French, American. And it's not politically correct, because the jerks that are out there today, I mean, I've been interviewed by newspapers, and they'll walk in the room, and right away it's like, why are there so many Nazi items? And I tell them, you know, our soldiers were not glorifying these criminals when they brought this stuff home. These were war trophies.
Correct.
And
right.
The Army did a study back then, and they realized that every time a soldier took a helmet, a Nazi flag, or something else, it wasn't to glorify Hitler. It was to reinforce in the back of their mind that they had a future to look forward to, and they're going to bring that thing home with them, and they're going to go to the barber shop, and, boys, I got this from Hitler's bunker, or whatever.
And it was not easily won.
It was something tangible that they could bring back as a trophy, a souvenir.
Right.
Not
right.
To commemorate the Nazis, but not politically correct. He has a Nazi flag. He must be a Nazi. No! But, you know, look what they're doing with the Confederate statues and everything else. How much time before they start going after that and going after World War II? They even have. I just saw a World War II veteran's gravestone that had been defaced recently on Facebook.
Oh,
they put the pictures up. So these kids don't understand, and I say kids loosely, they don't understand it. The schools don't teach it. They don't teach accountability, respect, or anything else, or values, or anything really about military history or pride in your country. It's a shame. And it's out there.
I heard a study. I'm sorry, Mike. I heard a study within the last 5 years. This is on NPR. They did a poll at some high school in America about within the last 5 years, and a huge percentage, maybe 30 or 40%, thought that the Nazis were our allies in World War II.
Yeah, see? Yeah, they don't
know.
Wow. I had one kid that worked for me that asked if we won World War II.
Oh.
And that night, the principal of the high school came in, and I said, you know, I called him out of the kitchen, and I said, you know, I said his name, and I said, he just graduated. He said, yeah, how you doing? Great. I said, he just asked me tonight if we won World War II. What are you teaching these kids? You're the principal. Tell me what. Well, you have to understand that with the curriculum, we don't set the. He was babbling. He didn't know what to do. I said, this is a disgrace.
That's
this is a disgrace right here.
That's a
simple thing like this. You know, but
that's how history repeats itself, I guess.
You know, now another thing, another aspect of it, getting back to D-Day, I'm sorry to have like floodgates open, but it's some things that aren't heard, that from dealing with the veterans and getting the war souvenirs from these men from when I was young and everything, you know what I realized? And it's not putting down any veteran that's out there, but the greater majority, the majority of the men that landed on those beaches, the men that were stuck in Bastogne, the men that were in Anzio, that were the men that were the front line, the guys that were stuck in those foxholes and shitting and pissing in those foxholes and sleeping in the same foxhole and artillery coming in, 88s tearing them up, the guys from the Hurtigan Forest, the guys that lived through it, when they came home, the country didn't know how to handle them. They didn't understand PTSD. These guys died young. These guys, the most of the hardcore frontline combat troops, I would guess by the 60s, they were gone. Sometimes a lot of them alcoholism, drugs, car accidents, suicide, because they didn't know how to handle PTSD like we do today.
Yeah.
Even now we're having trouble with it.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
A lot of these heroes didn't make it. We don't get to see them. So when I see the few that were there, that thankfully France did recognize and did award them. I mean, that was an honor to see them do that. But there are so many ghosts that were there with them.
Yeah.
That, yeah.
That's what one of the gentlemen said as he stood in front of the cemetery. He says he's just a representative for the true heroes, indicating the ones in the ground.
Yeah. No, it was not easy. And you knew your time was coming. And picture being on one of those Higgins boats. And having that door come down, and you know that this machine gun fire is just going to rip you up.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And I don't know. What they did was incredible, and a lot of them did it without even realizing. They were trained to do it. It was their duty. I had one medic. He was a corpsman. Which the Marines use the Marines would use their medics that came from the Navy, and he came in my collection room. So now he's gone. Now he was a great guy, but he was on Okinawa. He was on two landings, and he walked in my collection room, and the room is packed, everything you can imagine in there, and it was. It was one of those times when I wish I had a video camera that was just rolling, because the history, the stories, he unlocked a door in his mind, and the stories flooded out of him. And it was a speech that I just sat there. I was dumbfounded. I didn't know what to say to him. And the pain that came out of him. And we're talking years later. All of that is just, they put it away in a room in there. If you picture your mind like a mansion with different rooms, and they just take everything and they pack it away in a room and they just shut that door. Some of them lock it. But, you know, he walked in the room and he just started. And he said they were kids. He said we did what we could. We held them in our arms. He said they were bleeding. They were dying. There was no time. You weren't thinking country patriotism. They were bleeding. You had to stop. You had to get them loaded. We had to get them back to the ships. The doctors, surgery, they needed, we tried to keep them alive, but they died. And he said, we did whatever we could. And he just went on and on. It was horrifying.
Oh, yeah.
So this
yeah.
I'm glad he was able to. Hopefully that helped him.
Yeah. And it's the same thing with Normandy. I have no doubt whatsoever it's the same thing. And a lot of these guys took that baggage home with them. So, yeah, VE Day, everybody's partying and everything else. It's somewhere in the corner. Somewhere in the corner was one of those combat veterans that saw it all. I wished he never saw it all.
But,
you know. Oh, sorry,
Mike,
you sound like the voice of depression here.
No, that's
Mike,
voice of reality.
I really appreciate you calling in, Mike. You know, most of the time I get callers that are people I know. You know, Great Scott and above average average Don called in, but for you to call in with the information and the stories and the collection that you have, that's such a great add to the show, and I really appreciate that. You can are you on Facebook?
Yes, I am.
Well, if you don't mind, just email us at averagejo@carolina.rr.com, and I'd certainly be interested in.
Do you have a Facebook
Pardon?
Page?
Yeah, Average
Facebook
Joe.
Page?
Yeah, Average Joe Radio. But just in case you can't find it, you can email us at averagejo@carolina.rr.com. But yeah, Average Joe Radio is Facebook page. And
if you hold on 1 second, let me run over to the computer and I can send you a friend request. That way you can see who I am. Because I'll tell you what, on Blog Talk Radio, there are a lot of BS artists, and you never know, is this one for real or is that one not for real?
Right.
Trust me, I'm for real. Okay, hold on.
I haven't really listened to that many Blog Talk Radio shows. I've listened to a few just kind of getting used to the media or the medium.
What is it called?
And
is it Average Joe's apostrophe?
Average Joe Radio. Yeah, average J-O, J-O.
Oh, yeah. Okay, hold on. Average J-O. There you go. Got it. Okay, if you're on there right now, I'm hitting.
Let's see
here. I'm sending you a message. I'm sending you a
Alrighty.
Thumbs up.
Okay.
See me?
Yes, Mike. Well, I won't say your last name, but
yeah,
I see you. Okay, cool. Thank you, Mike.
And yeah, no problem. If you take a look through, my Facebook page is open so that you can see what we do, and you can see it's for real on there. And I mean, if the two of you are on there and Skype, if you want, even after the show, if you want to do a, if you have iPhones and we could do a video chat thing, I'll show you the room. You're more than welcome to take a look at the room, and it's fun to share it. Because, you know, like I tell people, the stuff doesn't really belong to me, because hopefully 200 years from now, it'd be nice if it was enjoyed and studied in a museum. It'd be nice to sort of think in the back of my mind that I'm babysitting it. You know, and it, hopefully it'll survive and some politically correct idiot doesn't burn it. That would be,
or maybe even in a school would be a good place for it.
You can't. Not with the mentality that they have in the schools right now. If you take a Pop-Tart and cut it in the shape of a pistol, they'll lock you up and put you away today.
That's not funny. You're right.
Yeah, this is they're idiots now that are running everything. We've been asleep at the switch so long, we let the fools, the dregs of humanity, come to the top and take control in the name of the greater good.
It happened pretty quickly, too, in my opinion.
Yes, it did. But I'll tell you what, there's a lot of anger out there in this, but that's how we ended up with Trump. People are fed up. People have said they've had it.
Well, Mike, I'm not going to be able to, like, I'm not going to be able to get on video with you this evening, but we can definitely stay in touch, and I would like to do that sometime. But we're gonna have to end the show. But thank you again, and thank you, Great Scott, and
listening
again,
awesome
to you, Mike.
Glad to hear you, Mike. I'm glad you called
in. Yeah.
Hope to hear
you
again.
Nice meeting you both, and look forward to keep in touch. If you have something coming up, send me a message through Facebook now that you have me, you know, and say, Mike, you're free, tune in or call in or whatever.
Yeah.
You know,
we don't always do shows about military history, but, you know, I do a little bit of everything. If you look at my Blog Talk Radio, the episodes, we're all over the place. But
I'm big Second Amendment. I'm very active with the Second Amendment groups, and also obviously the military, World War II. So yeah,
awesome.
Anything like that I could chime in on, I'd be glad to.
Cool.
Thank you, Mike. All right, guys.
All right.
Well, listen, we're out of here. Thank you, Great Scott. Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Above Average Don, and we'll see you next time.
Sounds good, brother.
Thanks a lot. See you later.